companion of people that we don't see.
So plant litter and animal excrete are significant pathways for nutrient returns to soils in grassland and grazing ecosystems. However, those two things differ. Excreta, as we can see from this figure from White and collaborators, tends to be deposited, especially in the summer grazing seasons, in areas more close to water and shaded regions of pastures. One of the issues or challenges with litter is that nutrients tend to not be as readily available, so we must rely on soil microbes for mineralization and decomposition of soil nutrients. This can also be beneficial because it can decrease the amount of nutrient loss within these systems. In tropical regions, this is an especially important issue, since tropical grasses tend to deposit low-quality plant litter. We can address the low litter quality issue in three ways. We can increase stocking rates and forage utilization, which will ultimately decrease the amount of litter that is deposited, but that will decrease the amount of fecal excretions returned onto the system. We can increase nitrogen fertilization, which will increase the economic costs for producers. And lastly, we can also promote the legume incorporation, since it will increase the amount of nitrogen within the system. Rhizoma peanut, as you've heard all morning, is among the few perennial warm season legumes that have adapted to the Florida environment, though its adoption rates have been largely diminished due to its high costs associated with planting and its long establishment periods, which means that producers will typically have to take the land out of production for one or two growing seasons for these plants to become fully established. Authors such as Castillo and collaborators mentioned that strip planting rhizoma peanut could potentially reduce the planting costs and offer new opportunities for forage utilization during this period. And if you're unfamiliar with strip planting methods, here we can see a field that was planted with bahia grass. And when you strip plant rhizoma peanut, you're planting generally lower amount of area, but as the rhizoma peanut establishes, it's going to spread and will eventually create a mixture between the both. So the context of the study that I'll be presenting today, it's a small part of a larger research effort in which we are evaluating the ecosystem services that are provided by grassland ecosystems in contrasting grazing systems. I'll be presenting only the first year of data from a two-year research effort in which we are evaluating the litter deposition and the decomposition under contrasting grazing systems, so that we can better understand the nutrient cycling processes in these different systems. We also want to use stable isotope methods in order to estimate and evaluate the carbon sources within these grazing systems. And overall, we want to estimate the nitrogen contributions from litter material in these grazing systems. So the study took place at NFRAC in Mariana, which is in North Florida in the Florida Panhandle. And the grazing trial was set up as a randomized complete block design, having three treatments and three replications for a total of nine paddocks, with each paddock measuring 0.85 hectares. It's also important to measure that we adjusted the stocking rate every 14 days so that we can keep similar herbage allowances across blocks. The three systems that we had was year-round continuously producing systems, which the first one was a fertilized grass system in which we had in the cool season an oat rye mixture fertilized with 112 kilograms per hectare of nitrogen. And in the warm season, we had Argentine bahia grass with a similar nitrogen rate application. The next system was unfertilized bahia grass plus a cool season mix system, which in the cool season, it was a mixture of oat and rye plus a mixture of red ball and crimson clover with a little bit of help from 3 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare just in that cool season. And in the warm season, it was just unfertilized bahia grass in monoculture. The third, it was a grass legume system with a similar approach to the cool season as I just mentioned. And in the warm season, we had Bahia grass strip planted with Rhizoma peanut. So those are our three systems. So in for the litter deposition, in both studies, we defined the litter as the dead plant material that was not attached to the plant. And we measured the mass every 5 weeks, starting from May and ending in November. And we measured six randomly placed quadrants within each paddock. And in the grass legume treatments, we collected six quadrants within the rhizoma peanut strips and six quadrants within the grass legume strips. Sorry. Upon collection, the litter was dried at 55 degrees Celsius in order to account for the yield. It was ground at 1 millimeter, and we determined the ash content so that we can eliminate some of the noise from the scent contamination. We bone milled the samples and analyzed chemically for carbon, nitrogen, and using an IRMS, we were able to analyze for delta nitrogen 15 and the carbon 13. And using the two-fold mixing model described by Fry, we were able to estimate the contribution between C3 and C4 species within the litter material. For the litter disappearance, we used a polyester bag technique in which we collected litter from each of the giving systems. We dried it at 55 degrees Celsius and then weighed 12 grams of litter and placed them within each bag. We incubated each bag for up to 256 days. And upon collection, we brushed off the remaining dirt that was on the bags and weighed. All the results were also determined on ash-free basins, since there's going to be scent contamination within all the samples. We have similar chemical analysis, as I just previously mentioned, for the litter deposition. However, due to the nature of this litter disappearance trial, we were able to calculate the organic matter disappearance and the nitrogen disappearance. For the litter deposition, we analyzed the stats using the prog mix from SAS, and the means were analyzed using the PDIF adjusted by Tukey at 5%. The fixed effects included the treatment and evaluation dates, and random effects the block and the treatment by blocks. And the evaluation dates were considered the repeated measure. For litter disappearance, we had a similar approach to the statistical analysis. However, when results were significantly showed significant differences, we used nonlinear models in order to fit the decay curves using the PROC and LIN procedure from SAS. So let's go to the results. First, we can begin by the litter mass. We did not have any treatment differences, but we did have an evaluation difference. The total litter mass that was deposited ranged from 350 kilograms per hectare in July and 1,500 kilograms per hectare in October, where it peaked. There was a decrease in the first 3 months, which in Florida, that's really the transition period between the cool season and when the warm season grasses start to perenniate, such as Bahia grass. There is that decline, most likely due to a net balance between litter deposition and decomposition. And in addition, this is an abnormally dry year, where in this 3 months, we had about 40% lower rainfall. So all those factors played into effect for the litter that was deposited within these systems. When we looked at the differences between the grass strips only on the grass legume treatments, we do see that the rhizoma peanut strips yield less than half of the litter that was deposited on average by the Bahia grass strips. And this was also largely due to the animal preference and selection for rhizoma peanut and preference to graze on the rhizoma peanut strips than on the Bahia grass. The CN ratio, we noticed and a treatment by evaluation difference, in which what was interesting was that the unfertilized by November, the unfertilized treatment ended with the greatest CN ratio at 42, and the grass legume and the fertilized grass ended with the lowest at a 29, and the grass legume treatments were in the middle of those two at 37. Now for the litter disappearance, there were no differences in the initial litter chemical composition when it came to nitrogen, carbon, and the ratios. The remaining biomass fit a linear decay curve, where we observed that by day 256, there was 42% remaining biomass in the unfertilized, which was significantly lower than the other two systems where we had close to greater amount of remaining biomass. When we look at the carbon 13 decay, we do see that it followed a linear plateau model, where in the beginning was more depleted in carbon 13, and as time moves on, it became more enriched, signifying that at the beginning there was most likely more effect from C3 species, and it became more towards a C4. This is probably due to the microbial preference for the lighter carbon isotopes, and as time went on, they would leave behind the heavier carbon isotopes. And in addition, there was most likely faster decay from C3 grass species. So when we put everything together, we can calculate the litter deposited from the relative decomposition rate and the litter mass. And if we multiply those from each system by the nitrogen concentrations, we can estimate the total nitrogen pool from that litter deposited. When we then take this value by the nitrogen that was released by the systems estimated from the litter bag technique, we can then estimate the total nitrogen that was released by the litter, or the total nitrogen that was returned onto the system from this litter material. And when we looked at these numbers, they're relatively low for these three systems. So in conclusions, we noted that Rhizoma peanut had a less significant impact since it deposited less above ground litter material. However, it is important to make note that this is only above ground litter mass that was being produced, and there's deposition and decomposition from litter mass that is deposited below ground. And it's also important to that the nitrogen release from these systems appears to be minimal, but then in the big picture, it's important to link the above-ground biomass to soil organic matter production processes. Thank you very much. I'll be happy to entertain any questions.
There's time for questions for David.
So the question was regarding differentiating whether the nitrogen was in the microbes?
That's right. So organic fraction or inorganic fraction? You said what was released.
Oh, okay.
Not later, but what portion of that is in each cell?
So we haven't looked at that because there's somebody else that's looking at the rhizosphere and at the more of the microbiological standpoint from that. But I think that's beyond the scope of this experiment. But that's and I think that was a big factor, and one of the reasons why we decided to take this approach, which when I was looking at this data and I was reading all the other papers, especially from Dr. Coleman now, I realized the importance of taking that approach, but as I've heard from other authors, that's very time consuming, going and clipping. So I do think that we can ultimately follow the approach that you mentioned and get a better idea and for future studies, yeah. Yes.
Nice presentation, Debbie. You had mentioned that whenever you compared the hay grass strips with the rhizoma peanut, that there was differences because of preferential grazing. And
Well, I think that would, I'm not sure about the, well, there's, the question was regarding about the, how the stocking rate affects the litter decomposition. And there's...
The
deposition. So there's work in the literature that reports that less litter is produced by greater stocking rates, and that's probably going to be due to the more forage being utilized. For when the animals consume more, there's less forage being grown, so there's less chance of litter being deposited in forage and nesting.
Thank you.